Hello, Texans. Welcome to the program. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris with you as we kick off the weekend with a fun Friday. Find out Friday. I'm not going to say what comes before find out, but we've got a lot of things to talk about tonight. Nick Caserio Jukebox coming up later on in the show because Nick was on the Pat McAfee show. He was on 610 this week. It's the Nick radio tour going on as the draft completed almost a week ago now. Obviously, Nick at the helm, and he had plenty to say about what the Texans did over the weekend and this entire offseason. And the offseason continues, of course. Also, Texans OGs. This week's episode features, of course, Andy Kalu, the host, and Fred Weary, an original Texan guard from Tennessee. I'll remember always when he was drafted, the very first Texans draft in history. Fred, one of those, 13 selections in the college draft, college draft. They had 13 picks because expansion. So you had one in the first round, two in the second. It went from there. So Chester Pitts and Jabbar Gaffney in the second round, those were good picks. Mm-hmm. You know, Jabbar played for a while in this league. Chester played every down for years. He was the Iron Man and all of that. But I've got something here, Johnny, because last night I did a segment, questions I get asked more than any other this week. But overall this offseason, and it's time to start really delving into this. The schedule will be out, we assume, presume, hope, by this time next week, we'll be able to really sink our teeth into the fixtures, as they call them in the Premier League.
That's right.
Let's look at the table and look at the fixtures. That would be the standings and the schedule. They have to have a different name for everything. Or if you're like me, you find out the hard way that in soccer, the home team is listed first, not second. Yes. That's why I showed up at a Dynamo game last year and the Dash was playing. Or were playing, as we use the plural in the singular in soccer team lingo. I'm going to the Dynamo this weekend, by the way.
Oh, nice.
It's Star Wars night, and Vanderkid, too, is a big Star Wars fan. He's 11 years old, so why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Why not? That's huge. I love how leagues that aren't in the NFL, that they'll do whatever. They'll do whatever they can. They come up with theme nights, and Star Wars night's got to be pretty interesting.
It's May the 4th, and May the 4th be with you. See, that's tomorrow. That's Saturday, so that's cool.
That makes all the sense.
What's your favorite Star Wars movie, Johnny?
It's probably just the original. I was never really a big Star Wars guy. I watched all three when I was growing up.
But you've watched every other one since, right?
No. I saw those original three, and that was it.
That was it?
That was
it. You ever seen The Phantom Menace?
No, the middle three
that were made. Right. I know it's the earlier episodes. And then you have the later episodes with the guy from Girls. What's his name? I forget.
Who plays those.
Whatever his name is. Darth. You know, the latest evil guy.
Yeah.
The funny thing about
Darth
Star
Maul?
Wars. Darth Maul was in the Phantom Menace, and he's actually in it's not Attack of the Clones. What's the TV show? The Clones? I don't know. Wars. That's what it is. Vanderkid watches that. And Darth Maul somehow is still alive for that show.
I saw the original three.
People listening can tell we're not really that knowledgeable.
Yeah, I know. And they're probably just laughing at us.
Kylo Ren. That's the guy's name.
Ah, yes. I saw the original three.
Yeah.
And that was that. And then there was, those original three. And then there was like this big, massive break. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, they came back with one of them, the Phantom Menace. The very first one that they came back with, I took Jack to go watch it in the theaters.
Yeah.
Now, back then,
it was 99, I think.
I
believe so.
I know I took Jack to see one of them, and we got maybe about a third of the way through, and he looked over and he goes, "Dad, can we leave?"
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. And I just went,
come on.
Sure.
Even a bad Star Wars movie, I'll watch it. It's entertaining.
No, he didn't care. Now, obviously, Jack, with crowds and things like that, there are some issues. But he just got kind of to a point where he was like, Dad, can we go? And then he's never asked to watch a Star Wars movie ever again.
Well, it's May the 4th, so tomorrow.
That's good.
This weekend, so a lot of Star Wars stuff going on.
May the 4th. Love it.
And that's the Star Wars references. One thing that strikes me about those movies is, in many series, there's always another evil guy who's above in the hierarchy of evil, the other evil guy that you thought was the highest you could go, like Chancellor Palpatine, right? The Emperor. You thought, well, there was Darth Vader, then there's the Emperor, but the Emperor has a boss too.
Right.
And I think maybe even he has a boss. There's a gigantic evil guy in a wheelchair in the most recent movies made, not in a wheelchair, but he's in this throne thing, and he's kind of intimidating.
Okay, I have one for you. You said something that triggered my thought. This is what I was thinking about when I was driving up here.
Mm-hmm.
You hit it perfectly. The hierarchy of evil.
Okay.
Who would you put in the hierarchy of evil of the Houston Texans?
Evil? Oh, in our enemies category?
Yes, the hierarchy of evil. Like
all time or right now?
All time.
Okay.
All time.
Oh, this is beautiful. The hierarchy of evil.
I mean, you got to start with Peyton, right?
Peyton Manning is
definitely
is
in there.
The highest of evil you can get.
Right.
Like a Star Wars movie, Manning became good after he retired.
Mm-hmm.
He turned back to the good side of the force,
right?
So he's all right now. I'm all right with him
We're
now.
Okay
I
with
enjoy
him now.
Peyton Manning.
Right.
I do. Back then, he was the emperor. He was Darth Manning.
Yeah.
He was evil football version personified. He was 16-2 as a Colt against the Houston Texans. 16-2, Johnny. You could not beat Peyton Manning, and it wasn't just him. He had his stormtroopers. He had Reggie Wayne. He had Marvin Harrison. He had Robert Mathis and Dwight Freeney. He had Dallas Clark. It went on and on. Edgerrin James, and then that gave way to Joseph Addai, mm-hmm. and it was awful for so many years. The first decade, basically, of Texans history was Peyton Manning, the evil emperor.
The hierarchy of evil, Peyton Manning, for sure. Okay. I will give you names that I can think of. You tell me whether they belong in the hierarchy of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Edward Brady, a.k.a. Tom Brady.
All right.
So in the hierarchy of evil?
He's second.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to tell you why.
You don't have to rank them. You just have to tell me whether they're in. If you had this round table and they had a board of directors meeting,
yes.
Thomas Edward Brady is there with Peyton Manning.
I know you've beaten Brady here. In 2019, you beat him on Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. It was an awesome night.
Yep.
However, and you beat him in 2009, the regular season finale.
Right.
He sat out a couple of series. That was the game where Wes Welker ripped up his knee.
Mm-hmm.
It's featured prominently in multiple Patriot documentaries. So you beat him then, too. But you've never beaten him at Gillette. And he ripped your heart out twice in the playoffs. In the divisional round, two victories for Thomas Brady. And also just numerous other times up there, week three of 2017. I don't have to go through all of them. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Monday Night Football in 2012 was the comeuppance that you didn't want to see because the Texans were 11-1 going up there with the Letterman jackets, and Brady just says, is that your heart? And rips it out of your chest. He's in the evil circle.
He's in the hierarchy of evil. So you think about this big boardroom, and two of the chairs are occupied by Peyton Manning and by Thomas Brady, Tom Brady, Thomas Edward Brady. I like saying the full name because I like Brady now. I don't know why. Here's another one. You got to think about this a little bit.
I bet I don't.
Fat Albert Haynesworth.
Ooh.
Is Fat Albert Haynesworth in the hierarchy of evil for one and one incident only?
Yeah, and there were other times where he's just a nuisance, a menace, but he is. Because he's more like a guy who does, like, Boba Fett. He does dirty work for them.
Right.
He knocked out Matt Schaub in
2011.
2011, playing for the Buccaneers, late in the game, quarterback sneak. Somehow he smushes Matt Schaub's foot into oblivion. Lisfranc surgery. We didn't know Lisfranc from Anne Frank from anybody, but we all knew what Lisfranc surgery was after that because that knocked Schaub out for the season, changed history. Obviously, it went very well with T.J. Yates relatively, but it could have got even better with a healthy Matt Schaub. So Haynesworth responsible for that.
Yep.
Yes, he's in the evil circle.
He's in the third seat. Okay. In no particular order. Okay, these two, I'm pretty sure that they are in the hierarchy of evil. In fact, you can discuss them if you want, but I think these two are about as easy. These two are about as slam dunks as
I know where you're going.
When the Pro Football Hall of Fame crew stands up and says, hey, John says, I'm presenting J.J. Watt for enshrinement in the Hall of Fame, and he can sit back down because you just don't need to talk about it anymore. But you can talk about him. Derrick Henry and T.Y. Hilton.
All right, so those guys are top five villains to me all time of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, they sit in the room.
T.Y. has had so many big games against the Texans, and none bigger than playoffs, playoffs of 2018 when he comes into NRG Stadium wearing a clown mask because of a comment that J-Jo made about him being a clown. And I don't fault J-Jo at all for that, but I figured when T.Y. shows up in the clown mask on a playoff afternoon, comes out of the bus with a clown mask on, I thought the Texans were locks to win.
Yep.
Didn't work out that way. T.Y. actually has a huge game against the Texans, and he is one of the all-time great Texans villains. And great in a big, not a good way, a big way.
Yep. Okay, so Derrick Henry and T.Y. Hilton.
Derrick Henry way up there. We all know what he did
still,
for...
He's got his throne sitting over there that he can just slide into.
But what happened this year? You had two historically good games. In fact, Henry in the game up there, when they were wearing the Oiler uniforms, he had one of the worst or the worst performance by a running back in the history of the league, considering how many carries he had in the game. That's amazing.
After all those games of 200 yards, it came to that. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Okay. The hierarchy of evil boardroom is really, it's really big.
Yeah.
Like, it's massive. Not just people can go into the hierarchy of evil.
You're missing a guy, by the way.
This is not a guy.
Oh, okay.
This is a location.
Okay. Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
Is Gillette Stadium in the hierarchy of evil?
It is. And I feel like it is more than another place where the Texans have lost in the divisional round.
Yep.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's in there. Gillette Stadium is definitely in the hierarchy of evil. It is one of the all-time Texan villains. Mm-hmm. It's not a person. It's a place. But it's the haunted house on the hill.
It's like the Death Star. It's like the Death Star.
It is. I'll tell you how bad it is.
Our ideas of winning die. Our thoughts of winning die as soon as we walk into Gillette Stadium. Hopefully that changes this year, but it's never happened.
Well, winning there in the preseason last summer, I got to tell you, this is how bad it's been there. Winning in the preseason was so satisfying
to me. Yeah, it was good.
It was a satisfying preseason win. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was, because we won up there. And also, it was D'Amico's first game.
Yep.
It was cool to be up there, to win there, to leave there satisfied. I didn't care that Stroud threw a pick. Stroud will be fine. He's learning. He'll be fine. I just want to beat the Patriots up there at Gillette Stadium with you-know-who coaching. Mm-hmm. He's done now. So you knocked him out. Well, you really didn't, because he went on to have the regular season, which knocked him out. But it was fun to win up there, John.
Yeah, it definitely was fun to win up there.
You lost two playoff games up there.
I know.
Two.
I know. We could also put M&T Bank Stadium, but it doesn't have quite the evil flair.
No, it doesn't.
Not quite.
It's not a good place, though, because the Texans have literally never won there as well.
Right.
And as John McClain reminded everybody last night when he was on the air with us, Texans have never beaten Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, oh, he's right about that.
Never.
Lamar's only been here once. That was 2020.
The COVID year.
Week two.
We had no fans in the building for that week.
Didn't
get to see him.
Eventually, they would have the scattered fans socially distanced.
But that was nobody.
I don't know why that first game, Texans weren't allowed to have
fans. Yeah, I don't know what it was. There's no fans.
It was empty. I don't want to have to do that ever again.
No more
pandemics, please.
Whenever they show highlights, there's that YouTube channel, NFL Throwback.
Yeah.
And they'll have some sort of highlight package of something, and they'll have something from the 2020 season, and you just see the sparse crowd, and it's just like the hair on the back of my neck stands up. I'm like, man. Okay, the hierarchy of evil. Nomination comes from Nashville, Tennessee. He is immortalized for being a turtle and at the back end of Andre Johnson's fists. Is Cortland Finnegan in the hierarchy of evil?
I won't give him that kind of respect.
Okay.
I respect people in the hierarchy of evil sitting at that boardroom table.
Yeah.
Finnegan doesn't get a seat there.
Think about the buildings and the people that are in there already. Finnegan doesn't deserve to be in there.
Yeah, it's like saying that, you know, something you have to call the exterminator for is in the hierarchy of evil.
Yep.
It's not. It's just a pest. He's a pest.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good one. He's a pest, though.
Pest.
And by the way, folks, if you haven't heard Andre Johnson with Andy Kalou in their Texans OGs episode, it's on the website. It's also on YouTube. And you go ahead and search for it. But Andre talks about Finnegan in a way that you might not have ever heard. And he goes over the whole history of the Finnegan thing. And
where
it goes
we
back,
got to that. Yeah, how we got to it.
It goes back years.
Yeah.
Now, I thought he got the games wrong. You know, players don't always. Because 09, week two, they played a game up there. Mm-hmm. So I think that in a lot of players' minds, that was the first game against the Titans that year. And then the second game was the Finnegan game. It wasn't like that. It was week two up there, 09. There's a massive brawl, but it's a pretty nice dust up in front of the Texans bench. Mario's involved with it. Numerous players. Finnegan's definitely involved. And later on that year, the Texans would lose to the Titans on Monday Night Football, and there was no Finnegan incident that was worth note. I'm sure there was stuff going on in the field, jawing, whatever, that we didn't see. Now, later in 2010 is when the Finnegan game occurs. Mm-hmm. 2010, I want to say the Texans, went up there after the home game. So the home game in 2010 was when the Finnegan fight was.
That was Rusty Smith, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Rusty Smith and Andre just kicking the daylights out of Courtland Finnegan. But then the Texans finished up the season. They didn't finish against the Titans, but they went up there later and got beat. And I don't think Andre played in that game. Anyway, he was ejected and fined for what happened against Finnegan. But Finnegan is not in the hierarchy of evil.
He's just a pest flying around.
He's a pest.
He's not in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Ugh. All right. Let's go to this one.
Okay.
Now, sometimes the hierarchy of evil can be so bitter and evil in just one instance. You got to think about putting him, her, or it in. Nomination for the hierarchy of evil. Matt Hasselbeck in a diaper. Does Matt Hasselbeck in a diaper go into the hierarchy?
I'm not
of
putting
evil?
Hasselbeck in there. You know, it's funny. Hasselbeck played here in 09 with the Seattle Seahawks, and the Texans won that game, first of a four-game winning streak to end the season. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Hasselbeck in a diaper game, he had Montezuma's revenge, 2015 Thursday night Colts. Ugh. And
threw two touchdowns to the aforementioned Andre Johnson.
Yeah, that really hurt a lot. That was one of those
games.
When
you think about it, it's like, whoo, man.
No, if we have to talk about specific games that were real disappointing, that's definitely maybe in the top five.
Yeah.
As far as games that didn't knock you out of anything, but they just made you feel horrible.
Right.
That, obviously, the Vince Young 39-yard overtime run. You know, we don't have to mention that again, do we, in 06. But I don't think Hasselbeck is. But you're missing a guy.
Okay. I know. I'm continuing down the list. We'll see if we get to that list.
Okay.
So Matt Hasselbeck in a diaper does not get in. In the hierarchy of evil. Okay. A guy that's relatively new on the scene. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that would fall in the Star Wars lexicon, but he's fairly new, but he has driven daggers into our hearts.
Yeah.
Numerous times.
Yeah.
Now we got him once.
Yeah.
But the other times have been just gut punches. Mm-hmm. Is Patrick Mahomes in the hierarchy of evil?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because they don't come back from down 24-0 without Mahomes. I know they had other breaks contributing to that, and Texans' mistakes like going for it in your own end in a punt formation or fumbling a kickoff return. Things not to do when you want to win a football game and when you want to try to protect a 24-0 lead.
Correct.
But from then on, Mahomes lit it up. And guess what? You had a quarterback on your side who the next year would lead the league in passing and throw a team record amount of touchdowns, 33 and all that, but you couldn't do anything about it. The Texans scored one more touchdown the rest of the night, day, whatever that was, because it was an afternoon into a night game. I don't know. What time of day did we kick that baby off?
I don't know.
It was light out when it started. It was dark when it ended.
That's right.
And very dark. Dark. Scott Pioli and Patriots Dynasty on Apple TV. Dark. Losing that game. But Mahomes is definitely in the hierarchy of evil. He is a menace. Mm-hmm. You lost that game in the playoffs. The very next game you play is the 2020 opener on Thursday night up there, and you lose that game. It sucked. It was awful. And he's fully responsible for your misery in that situation. Now, when did we face some other
22
than that?
Here. We got him down, and then they ended up winning in overtime.
Gosh, and that was so winnable.
It was winnable.
Stopped them in overtime.
I know.
And then we get a fumble.
Winnable. So into the hierarchy of evil goes Patrick Mahomes in a sidecar, Travis Kelce.
I'm going to throw one at you. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Travis Kelce.
Yeah, he goes in.
All right, so Travis Kelce, we see him in 2015, right?
Two touchdowns here. Yep.
Yeah.
First game of the year.
All right.
Two touchdowns here. 2016, shut him down.
All right, so 2015, first game of the year. What did he do in the playoff game here? 30-0 victory for the Chiefs.
Oh, I think it was over by the time they did anything in that game. I can't remember if he did much in that game.
Because You know,
I don't remember
Davis
how much
opening
he did.
Kickoff for a touchdown. No. But then week two in 2016, the Texans beat the Chiefs.
Shut him down.
Alex Smith, the quarterback. No Mahomes then.
Right.
But, yeah, shut him down.
AJ Boye covered him mainly man-to-man and shut him down. 2017, we played him here on a Sunday night. And I remember we couldn't stop him. 2019, we slowed him down in the first game, in the playoff game.
Yeah.
Forget about it. I think he had two or three touchdowns in that second game against us. And Travis Kelce is in the hierarchy of evil for many teams, but he has been a thorn. I'm voting for him to go into the hierarchy of evil right alongside Patrick Mahomes. He can get in the sidecar while Patrick drives a motorcycle. I'm putting Travis Kelce in the hierarchy of evil.
So do you put?
So I got one for you. Here's another one.
Go ahead.
Okay, now you got to think about this one a little bit, but it kind of fits because the player I'm about to ask you about, I think, is the definition of evil, i.e., dirty. I thought he was dirty as could be. Does Jets offensive lineman Matt Slauson go into the hierarchy of evil for what he did to Brian Cushing's ACL?
So this is a good one-off. I think it's almost another category, like Haynesworth. You mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
Slauson knocking Cushing out for the year in week five was Monday Night Football.
Of 2012, of a year in which we needed Cush.
You needed Cush because D'Amico's already gone, all right, in the offseason. Mm-hmm. Cushing's the leader. He's having a hell of a start to the year. And him going out meant that, all right, there's no D'Amico, there's no Cushing. You're playing Barrett Rood and Brady James at the end of the year. You're trying to hang in there at linebacker.
Right.
You can't cover all the Patriot running backs who are running
into Shane Vereen.
Shane Vereen dancing like Ben Vereen in the end zone.
Hold on.
What?
Okay. Well, I don't want to say it. I'll talk to you about it during the break. But I had a Shane Vereen blast on something. I'll tell you about that during the break. But I think that Slauson goes right in there and sits right next to Albert Haynesworth. They're in the
henchmen.
Kept the Texans from the Super Bowl hierarchy of evil with individual incidents because Haynesworth was 11, and then you had Slauson in 2012. And they single-handedly kept. Now, I was going to ask you another one.
Yeah.
I feel bad for asking this because he's just a sweetheart of a person, and we loved him, even though he didn't say a whole hell of a lot. But does Will Fuller's body go into the hierarchy of evil because he can stay healthy? And we could 2018, if he stays healthy, I remember after that Miami Dolphins game, I was watching NFL Network that night in my office, and they are just like, man, this Texans team, holy smokes, are they powerful? They're good. And we just hammered the Dolphins. They're like, but we don't know about the Fuller thing. Well, the next morning we find out Will tears his ACL. I don't want to put Will Fuller's body in the hierarchy of evil, but it goes into their hierarchy of sadness, that's for sure.
Well,
because had he stayed healthy, that team was just a different level with him.
It's another category.
I've got
other guys in that category.
Yeah.
Dominic Davis Williams.
Yeah.
3 years of beautiful stuff, and then he's done.
Yep.
All right. Steve Slayton. Because the following year after 08, when he led the AFC in yards
Steve
from
Slayton's
scrimmage.
Neck.
Yeah. 09, he's all dinged up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it football's weird. 08, you have a remarkable performance out of Steve Slayton through the entirety of the season.
Yep.
And you're one of the best offenses in the league, literally, at that point.
09,
you're kind of piecing together a run game any which way you can, and you're carving out a winning season. But the last two games of the year, a new running back emerges in Arian Foster.
Yep.
So that's just a year later. It's so interesting how all that plays out. Then Arian's here for a number of years, obviously. But right now, and then 22, we got Dameon Pierce erupting. 23 doesn't erupt, but Singletary has a nice year, almost 1,000 yards. And who knows where it's going now? You got Joe Mixon. Maybe Pierce really bounces back hard. Nick has said Pierce is figuring big into our plans. Good. I want to see Dameon Pierce rock on because I love Dameon Pierce. Let's go. Let's get back to it where you were in 22 or some version of that, and let's have it. But there are other categories like that because Slayton, Davis, Fuller, guys who couldn't stay healthy, who were supposed to be and would have been, I think, really, really great over the long term for this franchise.
Hierarchy of evil nomination. This one's a little tricky. It's a little tricky because he was here and we liked him and we could see how good a coach he was going to be. But then he went to Tennessee and became one of the better NFL head coaches. Now, we had success against him.
Yeah.
But does the hierarchy of evil nomination of Mike Vrabel with the Tennessee Titans. Does he warrant enough to get into the room with Mahomes, Peyton Manning, Derrick Henry? And because Vrabel was instrumental with Derrick Henry, does Mike Vrabel go in the hierarchy of evil?
No, not enough moments against the Texans. Week 2 of 18, that was really good coaching by he and his staff. Mm-hmm. That was really good. In 19, you know, you won the division in 19.
Right.
But it's the Titans who go to the AFC Championship game, not the Texans.
And they had all this celebration here that last game of 19, like they had done something. And then Henry's running for 250 against the JV defense. And they're like, look it up. Well, then they went to the AFC Championship game.
Right. Right. It's a good point. They celebrated because they made the playoffs. They go to New England, they knock them out, and that's really the end of the dynasty right there. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, they knock the Ravens out, the top seed in the entire tournament.
Okay, let me ask you another nomination. Hmm. This one I'll be careful with, kind of. Is the ownership of the Tennessee Titans in the hierarchy of evil?
All right, that's the hierarchy of rivalry.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I talk to players, who was I talking to this week? Oh, Wade Smith. I was with him at the insider reception, and somebody asked him who's the best Texans rival or the biggest rival. He said to the players, he thinks it's the Titans. Hmm. And I thought, okay, interesting, because of everything that's been going on now, when he played, you had Mawai and those guys, Van den Bosch. Mm-hmm. You had interesting – you had
Keith
blanking?
Bullock was the linebacker.
Yeah, and I'm blanking out on that. Jason Babin.
Jason Babin, yeah. You know, former Texan.
A bunch of players who were really into it with the Texans, and Finnegan among them. So he looks at that as a big rival.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts are a little different. You know, I always call them a nemesis, not a rival, because I don't think the Texans have a good enough record against the Colts to call it a big-time rivalry, but right. I think it is now.
Now,
when you look at... How many times have the Texans won there since they started winning there? Not
Five.
15, 16,
18, 22, 23.
That's strong. Mm-hmm. So since 15, held your own with them.
Since 14, if they would have not gotten a holding call, it would have been tied in the fourth quarter. I've been up there for 10 games.
Yeah.
10 games, 5-5.
You know, you can't really just take out the Manning years, but when you do take out the Manning years, it's relatively even. They still have the lead, and they did beat you in a playoff game in your building. But knocking them out in their building was so satisfying.
So sweet.
And I said it at the time. I said it after. The curse of the Colts is over, but the specter of the Colts being who they are, the horseshoe, is not over. You have to respect them. You cannot ever take it for granted that you're better than them, and you better go get them because they want you bad.
Okay. The hierarchy of evil nomination comes from New England. Mm-hmm. The head coach, former head coach of the New England Patriots, Bill Belichick. Does he go into the hierarchy of evil?
I don't feel like he does, Johnny. I think it's more Brady and the stadium.
Yeah,
I
mean, he's certainly the overseer. It's so funny you say that. I think the same thing. I was going to say no.
Yeah, I can't say that when Belichick was at the helm of the Patriots and they were really good that I liked him because I always looked at them as the bad guy, the opponent.
Right, right.
I respect Belichick so much, and I was actually really rooting for him in that Patriots dynasty, not like rooting for them to win Super Bowls as they were retrospecting, but I was rooting for him. Hey, why are they burying Belichick here in these later episodes when everybody else had a hand in this as well, right?
Right.
So I just thought they really wronged him in that series.
Absolutely. Okay, I got another one.
All right.
Hierarchy of Evil. Now, this is not a guy that we faced a lot. In fact, we faced him 4 times. The first time we got him, but he was a rookie. Well, it was his first year starting. But then the next 3 times, this future Hall of Famer lit us the F up. Does Aaron Rodgers go into the hierarchy of evil his 3 games in 12, 16, and 20 against the Texans?
Gosh, 12 sucked. That was really rough.
That was
terrible. Sunday Night Football.
Sunday Night Football at home, and he's just lighting everybody up.
16 was no picnic either because that was the 3rd loss of a 3-game losing streak at a bad time of year because they were 6-3.
He's limping his way to a win against us.
Yeah.
And throwing touchdowns to Jordy Nelson over a bare-chested Charles James.
2020, I had COVID. I'm doing the game at home.
Exactly. He brought that on.
He did. He gave
Rodgers,
me COVID.
Right. He goes in.
He gave me COVID.
Rodgers goes into the hierarchy of evil. Okay.
I think he's there. He's barely in the room.
Absolutely.
But it's 3-0.
He's in the room.
And you know what? We're going to see him this year.
He's like Scott Rowland going to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Don't know how he got in there, but he's in there. He's in there. So who's the chairman of the hierarchy of evil. Who sits in the big chair in the Texans hierarchy of evil?
It's Manning.
Okay. Who is the vice president?
Brady.
Who's the treasurer?
T.Y.
Okay.
Then it's Derrick Henry. Then Mahomes.
Yeah.
And then Rodgers.
And then Gillette Stadium.
Yeah. Oh, Gillette Stadium.
They'll just hold all their meetings in Gillette Stadium.
That's the facility.
That's exactly where they need to be.
Thanks a lot, Johnny.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, coming up, it is Texans OGs. We're going to have ND and Fred Weary talk. We're also going to have Nick Caserio's comments on the Pat McAfee show to showcase for you in case you missed them. And even if you didn't miss them, they are worth hearing again. It's Texans Radio. Back to it here on Texans Radio, and as promised, here's a great sampling of a conversation between ND Kalu and Fred Weary, Texans OG's podcast. This is just a tidbit of it. You should listen to the whole thing on HoustonTexans.com, Spotify, or YouTube. It's up there as well, as you can see video images of these guys, but they cover a lot of stuff, including one of the Texans draft choices, Blake Fisher, and early days with the Houston Texans, and Fred winning a national championship at the University of Tennessee. Let's listen in to Texans OGs with ND Kalu and Fred Weary.
Second pick. Offensive tackle out of Notre Dame, Blake Fisher. Just kind of thoughts, not so much on Blake Fisher, I'm not saying breakdown, but drafting an offensive tackle with your second overall pick as an organization.
Man, you win football games in the trenches. I mean, whether that's on the offense or defensive line, you got to make sure that you're, you know, taking care. That's a necessity, you know what I mean? Because those guys, quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, they can't do anything if you don't have those guys to take care of the business up front. I like the second pick, the kid from Notre Dame. I mean, one of the things that jumped right out at me, man, is, you know, hey, man, he knows how to sit and play with leverage and all and stuff. And so when as a former offensive lineman myself, when I see those, you know, watch guys on film, I mean, those are the things that I'm looking for, you know what I mean? He plays with knee bend. He plays with power and all and stuff. And so I think that was a great pick for them. And all and stuff, and I think he'll probably, you know, potentially come in and, you know, be a
push some guys. He's gonna push.
Hey, well, it's moving chairs sometimes with that offensive line and stuff. So you gotta, that's the thing about having a good offensive front. Hey, it's like putting a puzzle together. You know, I gotta make sure all the pieces fit and all and stuff. So hey, it may be some moving around. I mean, if he comes in and, you know, take care of his business and do the things that he's supposed to do, grow as a pro football player and. And grow early and all and stuff. I think that's a good fit for him on his offensive line.
Here's what I like about that pick with Blake Fisher, offensive tackle of Notre Dame. Look, people don't want to say it because of the successful season, and we forget. We have to be reminded the best teams, you compete at every position. So Blake Fisher is coming in here saying, Titus Howard, I'm going to respect you,
right?
But I'm trying to take your spot. You know, he's going to come in here and say green, whether if they bump me down as a guard. I respect you, but I'm trying to take your spot. And you want good players, like you said, guys that jump out on the screen to be, competing against one another. Mm-hmm. So when they drafted him, I didn't know much about him, but I knew I was going to be talking to you. So I was like, okay, good, I could find out. But I knew this wasn't a guy that, oh, let's draft him to be a swing tackle. It's like, no, it's to stir up. I think outside of Laremy Tunsil, everybody out there should be fighting for a job.
Yeah. I mean, heck, you look back, I mean, shucks, when me and Chester were drafted, you know? Did we know that because we looking at sucks. They got Tony Bussell in the room. You got Steve McKinney in the room. Jeremy McKinney, who was, a longtime NFL player. Ryan Young, we had guys like that in the room. And, you know, opening day, you know, me and Chester are starting as rookies and all and stuff. And that's the, mentality that we came in with to, hey, we're not just in just coming in here, no matter where we were drafted and all and stuff. I mean, it's business as usual. Let's go out here and, we worked our way through OTA, through mini camps, through OTAs and through training camp. And, next thing you know, hey, we're starting day one.
It's kind of cool that you came into an organization that hadn't played one game yet, but that's all you knew. So I was going to ask you, did it feel like you were in a startup organization?
Nah, I mean, Texans have always been the first class organization. We came in, we had a lot of veteran leadership, Aaron Glenn, Like I said, I mentioned Gary Walker earlier. I mean, had Tony Buscelli, even though he didn't get on the field and all and stuff. But we were able to lean on those guys and everything and stuff. I mean, Billy Miller, man, it's Chris Brown. Mm-hmm. I mean, Eric Brown. I mean, mm-hmm. we had a list of guys that have been Ryan Young. Man, I can go down the list. We had for a rookie class coming in, we were surrounded by a lot of veteran leadership.
Right.
Although the Texans was in that first season in that locker room, it didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I always go back to that, you know, when people, you know, ask about, you know, hey, maybe the wins wasn't there, but, you can never question that locker room. You can never question whether we went out there and played hard. You can never question, you know, any work ethic about, you know, things in the locker room. We were never at each other's necks in the locker room because we came in with a lot of veteran guys and they, you know, showed us a lot of veteran leadership and all at that time.
You say the wins weren't there, but there was a huge win that resonated throughout the entire NFL. And and it's almost like these crazy historic events. Like, you remember where you were when you heard about OJ. Well, I remember where I was when I heard the Texans beat the Dallas Cowboys opening game. And we're sitting in the locker room in Philadelphia, and we're all looking around like, hey, man, you see what them boys in Houston did? So you were there on the field. Just kind of talk about how special that was.
Man, it was it was very special. I mean, it's, you know, a lot led up to that. I mean, of course, we scrimmaged them. They came down here to Houston. We practiced against them, during the preseason. I mean, during training camp. I think we were over at, I guess it was U of H, older field, mm-hmm. and they literally just, you know, they mollywopped us, you know what I mean?
During the week of practice.
I wouldn't say during the week of practice, but that scrimmage we had that night, it was just like they were on, like they were playing in the Super Bowl, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, again, you don't take any time you step on that field, you don't take that for granted, but you know, that scrimmage that night, they brought a little bit more to the table, I would say. I remember one play, I forget who the defensive end was, but they ran an ET stunt, and I'm talking about the defensive end just literally just ear-holed me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just like, okay, all right. And, you know, we kind of picked ourselves up, you know, as a football team and said that, you know, hey, we can compete with them. I mean, because, you know, throughout the week of practice, it was just like what and what. And all and stuff. And so, but man, that first game, just the electricity in the building, I think that really, you know, I mean, we were coming in that game pissed off from from that scrimmage and just the, you know, things that they were doing. And you know, it was just their annex, mm-hmm. and all and stuff. I mean, you know, look, hey, we got something for that.
Okay.
And all and stuff. I mean, but the electricity that was in, I mean, you know, Sunday night football. I mean, I can't exactly remember how long, you know, football hadn't been in Houston before we played that game, man. But the fans brought just so much energy, mm-hmm. and all and stuff, man, that night. And I think it elevated all of our play and all and stuff. And once we got in there and, you know, they were in our house at that point, and stuff. And it really felt that way and all that night. And so, man, it was just it was great to get that W. Against, you know, America, so-called America's team that night and everything and stuff. I mean, you know, I think we kind of, you know, came out and made a statement, but it kind of started back, you know, when we worked out against them, you know, during training camp and stuff. So, you know, we kind of took, you know, that bad taste in our mouth and we made sure we took it to the field that Sunday night.
That's an awesome story. I didn't realize that y'all had a chance to the dual practices during training camp. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of when they try to flex on y'all.
Yeah.
But when the game actually mattered, y'all said, okay, we got some. So I know that's a special feeling. Would that game rank in your top five all time as far as special victories? High school, college, I know there's a lot of them. Would that make the top five?
Oh, man, definitely so. I mean, we went about doing it, everything that built up to that moment, you know, being the first, you know, sucks. I mean, rookie start for me, you know, I think, yes, that's definitely, you know, ranks ranks up there. I mean, of course, I mean, you know, winning the national championship at University of Tennessee is always, that was a special moment.
That's why I said top five, because yeah. I knew there was a couple that were going to be ahead of that.
Yeah, but yeah, I definitely give that moment being the Cowboys, that first game, man, that's definitely number two.
Talk about, because it's not every day you get a chance to talk to a national champion. So just talk about that season. Was it one of those special seasons before the year started? Mm-hmm. You thought to yourself, you know what, we might have something special here.
Yeah.
What was that like the year? First, give us the year. I read it, but I want to make sure I have it right. And, you know, just what it was like that year.
It was 98. You know, of course, I mean, I think the sports media world had, you know, written Tennessee off after Peyton left and all this stuff. Had T. Martin coming in as the new quarterback and all and stuff. But, you know, again, leadership in the locker room. I mean, guys like Al Wilson, Jonathan Brown, Peerless Price, you know. We came in as freshly, myself, Jamal Lewis, Cozy Coleman, Deion Grant. So, I mean, we, again, came with the mindset that we want to work and be a part of something special and all that stuff. And that's what it was all about, just a commitment by the team, you know, just a team, a collective team effort and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So, man, that was my, red shirt freshman year. I was dealing with an injury. Oh, it's a funny story about that. I played all season long. All right. When I first got to Tennessee, I had a stress fracture in my, baby toe, fifth metatarsal.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that I ended up, you know, having surgery, putting a screw in and whatnot and stuff. And, you know, sat out for half of the season that year. And I ended up having, coming back probably, I think we're getting ready to play Ole Miss, one of the defensive tackles. My first day back out at practice.
Don't tell me you stepped on stuff.
One of the defensive tackles, the starting defensive tackle, Billy Ratliff, ended up, you know, he got hurt in practice mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So initially, I was just supposed to come out there, you know, kind of gradually, you know, start getting back in. Maybe, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going, you know, get him to, you know, maybe get him some reps and get mm-hmm. him back out on the field. And I'm over there with the trainer, you know, we're just doing some, you know, just light jogging, getting off the football, working with the trainer. And Billy gets hurt. And I hear Coach Fulmer scream across the field, "Is Fred ready?" And so the trainer, like,
"That's funny.
Hey, this is a true story, man. Is Fred ready?" I was like, "Whoa, what, is he ready?"
Yeah.
It's my first day back out of practice, but I knew the sense of urgency. I wasn't going to say no.
That was a sampling of Texans OGs with Endy Kalou and Fred Weary. You can listen to the whole thing on Spotify, the HoustonTexans.com website, Texans app, and also on YouTube if you want to see a visual of this. Nick Caserio, visual image of him available this week on the Pat McAfee Show. What did he have to say to Pat? We'll have some cuts from that coming up next on Texans All Access. Final rendezvous of the show. Down the stretch we come. Again, more synonymous stuff for the final segment of the program here tonight. And as promised, Nick Caserio on the Pat McAfee Show. Some choice cuts from that. You've already heard the wrestling stuff on Payne and Pendergast as he referenced Payne and Pendergast in the interview, which was pretty cool for Sean and Seth and everybody involved with Sports Radio 610. Here's Caserio talking to McAfee about how he feels about the Texans right now.
Where the team is, you know, we feel we put ourselves in a position to hopefully be competitive and build on some of the things that we did last year. We also understand that every year is its own entity. Every year is going to be different. And I would say when you look around the AFC South, you know, we're just trying to keep pace with the competition. I think when you look at, you know, what the Colts have done this offseason.
Thank you.
A lot of respect for Chris and Shane, the team they put together. The Titans have done a good job. They made some changes there, brought in Coach Callahan. You know, they drafted some good players. They signed some good players in free agency. And then Jacksonville, I would say they're, you know, kind of kept together what they had, especially offensively, added a few key players. So the league changes every year. And so our job is just try to do the best we can, put the best team together and give ourselves an opportunity to compete. The margins are very small in this league. I mean, I think we were in 9 or 10 one-score games. So nothing is guaranteed other than an opportunity. So We're just trying to put together as good a team as possible with the right people, have the right mindset, and give ourselves a chance on Sunday.
More from Nick Caserio on the Pat McAfee Show this week. What, if anything, has changed about D'Amico Ryan since Nick Caserio and D'Amico started working together about 15, 16 months ago?
D'Amico is just so consistent day to day. He has his core philosophies and beliefs, what's important to him, and the way he messages that to the team is so consistent. Everybody understands what the expectation is on a day-to-day basis. I think I'm certainly appreciative of the relationship that we've established here over the last however many months it's been. Philosophically, we see football through the same lens, so that helps as we're putting the team together. We espouse a lot of the same philosophies and have a lot of the same core beliefs, so my job and my seat is just to support him as much as possible and do everything I can to give him an opportunity to be successful. But the players respect the hell out of him because he's so real. He's passionate about what he does. He does it with enthusiasm. And it's the same expectation that we have for the players as well.
He's got that massive smile.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, hanging some guys.
He loves what he's doing. Yeah, he loves what he's doing. Which is, it's important. It absolutely makes a difference. The players feel that, and they see that.
All right, not to go radio audio nerd on you here, but McAfee, you hear the sound of his voice in that cut. He's using an Electro Voice RE20 microphone, and you can see him using it when he does the show. That microphone will make you sound like James Earl Jones. In fact, I should get one of those for the games. Yes, Luke, I am your father. Anyway, back to the Nick Caserio cuts on the Pat McAfee Show. What is life like now compared to when Nick got here in 2021? My gosh, time flies.
Even when I took over, I mean, I think the goal was let's just start to make some progress. And we understand nothing's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of effort from a number of different people. You have to be disciplined. Quite frankly, you have to have a certain level of mental toughness just to kind of push through to the next thing and focus on what's ahead and not worry about what's happened in the past. So I was fortunate to be in a great program for 20 years where I think some of the things that I learned in that building, hopefully we've been able to apply. You're never guaranteed anything. And I think our vision more than anything else was just to try to put a good solid foundation in place with the right people to give ourselves an opportunity to compete on a consistent basis. And I think as we've kind of pieced it together kind of year by year and different players that have come through the building, I'd say obviously the hiring of D'Amico was a key part of this as well. I mean, I'm biased, but he's one of the best coaches in the league, period. I don't think anybody could argue that. So I think when you start to add some of those elements in place, and then we've added a number of young players over the last few years. I mean, CJ and Will performed at a really high level. So, you know, we're very fortunate and we're excited about what's in front of us, but we also understand the challenges that are ahead, which are significant, and we're certainly not going to take anything for granted.
There are some choice cuts from Nick Caserio on the Pat McAfee Show this week. Who's fired up for football? I know I am. Big week next week. The schedule's going to come out in all likelihood. So we will ingest it together and react. Can't wait. Go check out the app at HoustonTexans.com for all the podcasts, videos, every bit of information on your favorite football team. Area 45 coming up. They will dissect what is happening in sports this weekend and beyond. Thank you, Byron, for producing. Have a great night. Go Texans.